And we are in the book of Exodus, of course. I want to finish chapter 21, not very much there. But we're going to go into chapter 22 and 23 today as well. So it's just not that complicated to go through the rest of these particular what's called judgments or mitzvah or mitzvot, which is the Greek Hebrew word for the word judgments. Not good manner, not good teachers, or good lessons, or good this. It's a matter of not deeds, it's a matter of judgments. And these are judgments that God has established prior to anything happening. Explain what I'm saying here. Okay, so let's read 22 and 23.
If a man steals an ox or a sheep and kills it or sells it, he shall repay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If a thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guilt for him. But if the sun has risen on him, there shall be blood guilt for him. He shall surely pay. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the stolen beast is found alive in his possession, whether it is an ox or a donkey or a sheep, he shall pay double. If a man causes a field or vineyard to be grazed over, or lets his beast loose and it feeds in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best in his own field and in his own vineyard. If fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that the stacked grain or the standing grain or the field is consumed, he who started the fire shall make full restitution. If a man gives to his neighbor money or goods to keep safe, and it is stolen from the man's house, then if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If the thief is not found, the owner of the house shall come near to God to show whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. For every breach of trust, whether it is for an ox or a donkey or a sheep or a cloak or for any kind of lost thing, of which one says, "This is it," the case of both parties shall come before God. The one whom God condemns shall pay double to his neighbor. If a man gives to his neighbor a donkey or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep safe, and it dies or is injured, or it is driven away without anyone seeing it, an oath by the Lord shall be between both to see whether or not he has put his hand to his neighbor's property. The owner shall keep shall accept the oath, and he shall not make restitution. But if it is stolen from him, he shall make restitution to its owner. If it is torn by beasts, let him bring it as evidence. He shall not make restitution for what has been torn. If a man borrows anything of his neighbor, and it is injured or dies, the owner, not being with it, he shall make full restitution. If the owner was with it, he shall not make restitution. If it was hired, it came for its hiring fee. If a man seduces a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, and he shall give the bride price for her and make her his wife. If her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money equal to the bride price for virgins. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. Whoever lies with an animal shall be put to death. Whoever sacrifices to any god other than the Lord alone shall be devoted to destruction. You shall not wrong a sojourner or oppress him, for you were sojourners in the land of Mitzrayim. You shall not mistreat any widow or fatherless child. If you do mistreat them, and they cry out to me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath will burn, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children fatherless. If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like a money lender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering, and it is his cloak for his body. In what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate. You shall not revile God, nor curse a ruler of your people. You shall not delay to offer from the fullness of your harvest and from the outflow of your presses. The firstborn of your sons you shall give to me. You shall do the same with your oxen and with your sheep. 7 days it shall be with its mother. On the 8th day you shall give it to me. You shall be consecrated to me. Therefore you shall not eat any flesh that is torn by beasts in the field. You shall throw it to the dogs. You shall not spread a false report. You shall not join hands with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. You shall not fall in with the many to do evil, nor shall you bear witness in a lawsuit, siding with the many, so as to pervert justice, nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his lawsuit. If you meet your enemy's ox or his donkey going astray, you shall bring it back to him. If you see the donkey of one who hates you lying down under its burden, you shall refrain from leaving him with it. You shall rescue it with him. You shall not pervert the justice due to your poor in his lawsuit. Keep far from a false charge, and do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not acquit the wicked. And you shall not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the clear-sighted and subverts the cause of those who are in the right. You shall not oppress a sojourner. You know the heart of a sojourner, for you were sojourners in the land of Mitzrayim. For 6 years you shall sow your land and gather its yield, but the 7th year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat, and what they leave the beasts of the field may eat. You shall do likewise with your vineyard and with your olive orchard. 6 days you shall do your work, but the 7th day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may have rest, that the son of your servant woman and the alien may be refreshed. Pay attention to all that I have said to you, and make no mention of the names of other gods, nor let it be heard on your lips. 3 times in the year you shall keep a feast to me. You shall keep the feast of unleavened bread. As I commanded you, you shall eat unleavened bread for 7 days at the appointed time in the month of Aviv. For in it you came out of Mitzrayim. None shall appear before me empty-handed. You shall keep the feast of harvest, of the first fruits of your labor, of what you have sown in the field. You shall keep the feast of ingathering at the end of the year, when you gather in from the field the fruit of your labor. 3 times in the year shall all your males appear before the Lord God. You shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with anything leavened, or let the fat of my feast remain until morning. The best of the first fruits with your ground you shall bring into the house of the Lord your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. Behold, I send an angel before you to guard you on the way and to bring you to the place that I have prepared. Pay careful attention to him and obey his voice. Do not rebel against him, for he will not pardon your transgression, for my name is in him. But if you carefully obey his voice and do all that I say, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. When my angel goes before you and brings you to the Amorites and the Hittites and the Perizzites and the Canaanites and the Hevites and the Jebusites, and I will blot them out, you shall not bow down to their gods nor serve them, nor do as they do, for you shall utterly overthrow them and break their pillars in pieces. You shall serve the Lord your God, and he will bless your bread and your water, and I will take sickness away from you. None shall miscarry or be barren in your land. I will fulfill the number of your days. I will send my terror before you, and I will throw into confusion all the people against whom you shall come. And I will make all your enemies turn their backs to you. And I will send hornets before you, which shall drive out the Hevites and the Canaanites and the Hittites before you. I will not drive them out from before you in 1 year, lest land become desolate and the wild beasts multiply against you. Little by little I will drive them out from before you, until you have increased and possessed the land. And I will set your border from the Red Sea to the Sea of the Philistines, and from the wilderness to the Euphrates. For I will give the inhabitants of the land into your hand, and you shall drive them out from before you. You shall make no covenant with them and their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you.
A whole lot of thou shalt nots, isn't it? It's more than just the ten, isn't it? And sometimes there are these mitzvot is in the Ten Commandments, and some of them are not. Almost some of them. There seems to be a different way of looking at things as we have already received the Ten Commandments. So what is it you are seeing here in, let's say these two chapters, anything in it, they're not really that hard to understand, so we'll go through them relatively quick. Any questions? Or any thoughts?
I think it's interesting in chapter 23, verse 13, it says, don't mention the name of other gods.
Okay, we'll talk about
and
that.
And one of the things that proponents of worshiping other gods will tell you is their God is the same of God as their God's name is the same name as the God of Israel, and they aren't, and they push to have their God's name spoken.
We will discuss that when we get to verse 13 there. It's one of those mystery questions. Yes.
Well, as reading the Exodus and stuff, it's like lessons in life, just how to treat people, you make a mistake and you borrow something, it's good to, that's just for the person. I mean, you may not have meant to break something or hurt something, but the proper way to repay a person.
Yes.
I like that.
The thing is, a question I would ask you, how would you avoid these judgments? That's the issue on all these chapter 21, 22, 23. These are judgments God is placing upon anybody that does any of those things. So, in order to make sure, quote, that you don't do something, what do you do to make sure you don't do it? If a man, verse 1, 22, verse 1, if a man steals an ox or a sheep and kill it or steal it, or sell it, he shall restore it 5 oxen for an ox, 4 sheep for a sheep. How do you avoid that judgment? Don't steal an ox and don't steal sheep or any other kind of animal. So this is not a good deed thing. This is a judgment that's going to come against you if you do that. So the fear of the Lord is here in these judgments. Yes.
It just reminded me of this is the love of God, to love Him, to keep His commandments. And this is the love for the neighbor, to keep His commandments. And clearly we're seeing it in action right here in this.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Daniel.
I agree. This clearly is an obvious example of how you love your neighbor, even if your neighbor is a rotten scoundrel. You still have to love your neighbor. I had a question, though, which is, I guess, a little bit confusing to me. On verse 3 of chapter 22, or actually verse 2 and 3, specifically. But it says that verse 2, starts out, if the thief is found breaking in, and he is struck so that he dies, there should be no guilt for his bloodshed. If the sun has risen on him, there should be guilt for his bloodshed. He should make full restitution. If he has nothing, then he should be sold for his theft.
Okay.
Well, the way this sounds to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but is that, all right, so if thief's found breaking in, and obviously you strike him, or somebody in your home strikes him, and he dies, I'm assuming it means at nighttime. It doesn't specify that necessarily. At nighttime, then you're not guilty for killing him. However, in the next sentence, verse 3, it says, obviously the sun rises, you're guilty for killing him. Assuming you didn't kill him, it says, then he should make full restitution. If he's found breaking in, he hasn't actually stolen anything yet. So
correct.
What is he making restitution for?
Anything he breaks. Or anything. He's a thief. He's stealing something.
Well, we define breaking in as in like you could technically
entering
break
in.
But you could technically break into a window, but you could also just open it up and crawl in.
Right.
And
right.
We still call it breaking in, even though it doesn't actually break anything. If he opens the window, crawls, then he's found, What's the restitution? Is it he was going to steal? We don't know what. He didn't actually steal. So what is it that he's, other than trespassing, what is it he actually that he restores in that instance?
Okay, what does it mean in verse 2 if the thief is found breaking up? If a thief is found breaking up. Didn't say if the thief is found robbing something. Doesn't say if a thief is found stealing something. A thief is a thief. All right? What is he doing at night to get into your either house, your barn, your animals? He's going in there. He's going to steal them. Because the first verse talks about what? The thief who steals an ox or a sheep. So it's not necessarily in your house. It's those that you have. Now, if he breaks in, that's what that word means, to break in pieces, break apart, to destroy. That's what it basically boils down to in Hebrew. So now, verse 2-3 here, he said, now, if it's done during the daytime, there shall be blood shed for him. Really? For he should make full restitution. Why? If he has nothing, then what is this thief going to do? He's going to be sold. Where do you sell a thief?
An ox.
The marketplace. You want to buy one? Well, what? Let's backtrack. Unlike we think in the 19th century, 18th century, first, yes. We're talking about someone who does something and judgment must be against him. When a thief steals something, he's caught. What is a thief supposed to do? Pay back. Now, if he can't, what happens?
He
then they're sold for the value of what he broke up or stole. Now, who makes that judgment? Well, later on, the book says it's the Elohim makes that judgment. And how far it should go. Alright? And they have to make an oath before Elohim to make sure things go according to their said. Because only God's the only one who knows the truth. And therefore, you don't take that oath lightly. If the sun be risen upon him, or if the thief is doing it during daytime, something's going to be had. There shall be blood shed for him if you kill him in the daytime. Our object in our life, of course, is the guy stealing my gold watch. I'm taking my .22, blow his head off. Right? And that's justification, right? Isn't it right to kill someone when they steal something from you? According to human thinking, yes. But not according to God's thinking. Now, if it's the middle of the night, can't see a single thing, and he's doing something, you don't know if he's going to there to rob you, kill you, or do ambush to your children, or anybody else, take a .22, blow his head off. God says, justification. It should be a warning to thieves. If you're going to steal something, do it in broad daylight. Yes, go ahead.
I was just thinking, you know, if you're in the, they didn't used to have light switches. So,
the
yeah.
Flashlights.
But, you know, if somebody's breaking into your house, you know, you hear them moving around or whatever. You don't know why they're there. You don't know if they're coming in there going to try to harm some in your family. You know, you don't know why you're there. And if it's under cover of dark, you don't know who they are and you don't know what they're doing. So if they die because of what they've done, then that's just kind of the punishment. But if you do find out who they are, God always goes for the life of people, and if you can see who they are, then they now have a chance to make restitution somehow,
right?
Which preserves their life.
Now, when you're sold for the value of what you stole, who's going to buy it? Whom? The slave market. Now, according to God, he, after he has paid it, however he has paid it, he is no longer quote, a slave, end of quote.
Could the owner also make him be a slave and work off the restitution?
Yeah, that's how it used to be. A thief was not put in prison. A thief was to go and work for somebody until he worked it off. And the person who he now, quote, becomes a new owner to, maybe it's the rich guy, and you're a poor guy, not your middle class, you can't afford, and you sell this guy, instead of throwing him to prison, what do? You have him, give him to somebody else, sell it to somebody else, actually, and then guess what? You get what you got, and that guy's got to work for it. The thief has to work his way for justification. He has to justify, or should say, restitution of all things. Even a thief has to pay his restitution. And we're talking physical things here, of course, right? Well, these are judgments that God has put together, not us. We could disagree with it. What good is that? You're just in disagreement, that's all. There's also laws in our country, I don't know if you know them, but it came from this word, that if you kill somebody in broad daylight who's robbing you, that's no grounds. You will go for manslaughter. You'll go for manslaughter. Now, if he's going to kill somebody, it's self-defense. That's a different issue. But if he's just going to rob you, take your gold watch, and you kill him, uh-oh, guess what? You use forces beyond the ability that you have. We have that. You know, that's why boxers, fighters, they can't use their hand to hit anybody for any reason except self-defense, of course. What happens? If a box you break into a boxer's house, he comes up and he gives you a good old 1-2, you're dead. Too much force. We have that in our own country, our own law. Almost every country state has this, yes.
I think personally that we should concentrate on things like you are not to repeat false rumors. Do not join hands with the wicked by offering.
I grant. We're trying to answer this one particular question that came in verse 2 and verse 3.
All right.
That's what I've been trying to do, is answer that one question. All right.
Do not follow the crowd when it does what is wrong. I know. I get that. Okay.
You know, I have a question for you. There's a commandment that says, thou shalt not steal. And here is saying, well, now if you steal, what's going to happen to you? Is it going to be the death?
Yeah.
Or is there restitution? That's what you have to pay attention to. All right? Yes?
If you made the penalty if you didn't elaborate on the penalties, everybody'd be dead. Because there would be automatic, you did this, you're all gone. You have to be able to let people grow and learn, oh, I don't think I'll do that again.
We don't have to worry too much about the vineyard and, you know, if the beast is found in the field and the beast is in the yard and so on and so forth, he will make restitution. You know, if something happens, these are judgments for God. Now, let's go on here now. Because all the way to verse 8, it's all about thieves and doing something wrong. But it's very interesting here. I want to go to verse, see, was it 20? Where was that now? I want to jump real quick to verse 21.
22.
21 first. Now, what does this mean?
It's not to emotionally afflict or physically afflict or take advantage of a foreigner.
In Hebrew, it's do not do violence against a stranger. Violence? Interesting word.
Well, my doesn't say, it says oppress him, which could mean a lot of things.
As what?
My word says not to oppress. A sojourner.
No, go to chapter 32, verse 9. There's the Hebrew word for oppressed. You shall not oppress a stranger, for your heart, for so on and so forth. One in Hebrew is violence. The other one is oppression, to oppress them.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's two different ways that God's looking at it. He's saying, now don't do this to a stranger. Would you do that to a friend? Same damage going to happen to you if it happens, you know. But, you know, so why would you not do that to a, I'll put it in our English terminology that we maybe understand. Why would you do that to a goy? Why would you do that to a goy? Non-Jewish? Would you do that? Well, why not? He's a stranger. He doesn't belong to you, not part of you. Why don't you do it? Because God said, why? You were a stranger. In a sense, you are a goy in the land of Egypt. Turning the words around. Yes?
It's an issue of vulnerability.
Vulnerability, okay.
A stranger doesn't know where to go to get help, doesn't know what's the systems are. They're vulnerable.
I find very interesting here in chapter 22, verse 22, you shall do something. You shall not afflict a widow or the fatherless child. You don't get away beating up with women. You don't get to beat women. Nor do you get to beat a child that has no father. None of your business. If you do, what's God going to do? He's going to bring a sword against you. Pretty heavy stuff, right? How do you avoid that judgment? Don't afflict any widow. And don't afflict any child who has no father. Yes.
But God is love. What happened to that?
Well, it happened right here.
I understand.
He loves the widow and the child so much, he could bring a sword against her enemy and make his wife and his children fatherless. That's how the love of God is right there.
Yeah.
I mean, even Stephen.
Well, I'm just saying there's bleeding hearts out there. That say
now, this is the act of God going to do it, not society, not people. Elohim's going to do it. All right? And so you could, our society doesn't do anything to people, but lo and behold, God will. Once again, it's like, how do you treat, go to verse 25 of Exodus 22. How do you treat somebody who is poor? Not temporary poor, just plain old poor. How are you supposed to treat them? What does it say?
He says, if you loan them money, don't charge them interest. They can't possibly afford it.
Now, he's very clear about something in this statement. If thou lend money to my people, that is poor. Oh, what about other people who are poor? My people. How should you treat God's people who are poor?
It says in the New Testament if you give something to someone, if they ask you for a loan, you give it in your coat also.
Correct.
And you don't expect it in return.
No strings attached. Correct.
Yeah.
I wonder where he got that from, the New Testament guy got it from. I wonder where. I bet he cheated way back here. Look, no. Since he lived a righteous life, he knew exactly what it's all about. Well, the writer did a good job. I find it very interesting, though, that when you are poor, you're dealing with the verse 25 to 28, 27 has to do with a poor person. You shall not take thy neighbor, that is the poor neighbor, a remnant for pledge, or if you do, you're going to do something with it, you'll give it back to him. Now, I don't know if you've ever done this before, but maybe somebody's asked you for, I need 20 bucks. Okay, you pay me back? Yeah. Okay, tell you what, you got your lunch there. Let me take your lunch. You get 20 bucks, do what you did, and you come back. And if you don't have the 20 bucks back, I'll give you lunch back.
No.
We don't do that, do they? Because we don't think that way, do we? We're not that kind of person, are we? What would we do? We'd have given 20 bucks, right?
I would give them and say, here's $20, don't even worry about it.
It's just as much
This is not telling God, us, how God wants us to run life. If you do this, if you take something of a pledge from a poor person, this is how you are to do with that pledge, return it. Okay, that's a simple language. If you don't, guess what? You get to pay double. Yes.
In this country, our laws are based on these laws.
Right.
Our approach is based on these laws. In many countries that don't have what the psalmist says, the wisdom that he gave us, if they take a pledge, you don't get it back, they
now,
kill you.
Who actually takes charge of this if that happens? Yeah. Police don't, society doesn't, your neighbor doesn't, the priest doesn't. Who takes charge? Oh, man. And that's why you have the fear of the Lord on you. Should you not have the fear of the Lord if you do that? Oh, he's going to be gracious to the poor guy. What about you? Yes.
Makes me wonder about these pawn shops. If you think about it, because oftentimes people go to a pawn shop when they don't have any other way to get money. So they give up, you know, their wedding ring or their guitar or their whatever. You know, and the pawn shop owner has to know they're like totally destitute to be at that point to be going to a pawn shop usually. But yet if you don't return the money with interest within, I don't know, whatever the time period is, 30 days or whatever it is, they sell your wedding ring or your guitar or your whatever.
I've never thought about that question. That's a good question.
Yeah, so you got to wonder how pawn shops would get away with that with this kind of rule.
Yes.
That pawnbroker does not charge his relatives interest.
We're talking about God's people here. When you do something with God's people and you mess around with God's people, God's going to mess around with you.
But if he's reading this, someone who has loaned, he is saying if you lend money to any of God's people,
right,
then don't charge interest. If that person's concept of God's people is his relatives.
If he's poor.
If,
keep that part in mind.
If
he's talking about a poor person.
I know, that's not what I'm saying. If that person's looking as his relatives as God's people, then he has a right to charge interest of someone who's poor who is not, in his mind, one of God's people. That's what you say, but that's not what he thinks.
Let's go. She had a question over there. I didn't think this would be such a... I guess it's kind of interesting. Yeah, well...
You know all this, but not all of us.
But later in the book says that you can feed the torn animal to somebody who's
not there yet.
No, but I'm saying...
Yes.
But and then he says you can charge interest to somebody who's not...
Correct.
God's people. So...
Correct.
Ding, ding.
Oh, we get it. It's not very hard to figure that one out, by the way. When you stop and think about it. House of Israel represents God's people, right? Simple as that. Don't mess around with them. And you are the house of Israel. Don't mess around with your people. I'm be spying on you. They're mine. We read that in Hebrews. We read that in Exodus. They're mine. They don't belong to anybody else. Paid the price for them. All the firstborn of Egypt. Pretty heavy price. All right. One more interesting thing. Verse 29, I think that's very fascinating here. Thou shalt not delay to offer the first of the ripe fruit. We'll go into that a little later on in the next chapter. And of thy liquor, wine basically, and the firstborn of thy sons thou shalt give unto me. Now, verse 30, likewise, Thou shalt do with thy oxen and with thy sheep. 7 days it shall be with its dame or its mother. On the eighth day, did you catch that? You will give it to me. What's fascinating that on the eighth day, something is given to God, the firstborn son, and then here on the eighth day of any animal that's born, of oxen, of sheep, it's going to be given to him on the eighth day. Fascinating, don't you think? Well, yes, but at first he says, your firstborn belongs to me. When did it come? On the eighth day. Now, Yeshua was taken to the temple, and he was circumcised on the eighth day. Why did you take him there for? Because the law so said so. What? To give him to God. Circumcised. Why give him to God circumcised? Why not just give him to God, circumcised or not? What does circumcision represent? The flesh being thrown away. Discarded. No longer part of you. All right, now let's go on to chapter, next chapter.
Okay, so on the eighth day, is that also the redeem, when he's redeemed at that time too? Because the firstborn son needs to be...
You can redeem your firstborn yet. Same thing with a goat, or with a donkey. But you redeem a donkey by taking a sheep. You kill the sheep for the donkey. But the redeeming is you could buy him back. Why? Who bought Samuel back? Remember Samuel? Who bought him back? Nobody. That's why he stayed there. He was given to God. Therefore, God used him. Remember, God can substitute the firstborn for another one. He does that quite often. The whole book of Numbers is talking about that situation. We won't go there today. Chapter 23 first. Very interesting here. Verse 2 and 3 are connected together, by the way. Thou art not after many to do evil. Don't go after those who do that which is evil or bad. What happens when you follow the multitude who does evil? Let's say a gang of people that want to go do some bad things. I want to talk about a gang now. He didn't mention gang. He just mentioned people. You can have a riot of any kind in any city for any reason. Yes?
You know, it seems to me common sense that if you go that direction, who's going to wind up hurting in the long run? I mean, you know, it's like most of these things, you know, the point is to save you from suffering, you know, save you from hurting. I mean, anything you do, I mean, even when you start like joining in and repeating false rumors, that can get ugly on you.
Yep. There's a second part of this verse, though. All right. We have a gentleman back there in the back sitting right there. He's confronted with these mob rule quite often. But he doesn't beat him with a stick, although he proved like you. But they go after, and most of those, my personal opinion, I think he kind of knows it too, he kind of looks at them, they don't have the slightest idea what they're here for. They're just here because the mob's here, and the mob thinks they should be doing something right. And here his last part says, you will not even talk about what the mob is angry about. You don't even associate and carry on their cause. Keep your mouth shut. Yes.
That can go the same thing in a government, because you can be in the military and be under an order to not do something, even though you know it should be done. And if you follow the order and someone's killed because you didn't, you stood down, it would have been better to have disobeyed the order and get court-martialed, because you can't stand against something that's right.
Oh.
Even if, and in this regard, you're the one that's going to get hurt, but you have to stand for what's right.
Now, the next sentence is very important. Bill.
Anything either.
Jericho?
When they marched around the walls of Jericho, they weren't supposed to be talking then either. Just
marching around. Okay. Gotcha. That wasn't mob rule, though. That wasn't the mob doing it. That was commanded by God to do that. A little different issue. But verse 3 is very fascinating. Does anybody have a very interesting translation of verse 3 at all? No comment? Yeah, poop, yep. So what does it say?
The New American Standard translates Exodus 23:3 as, quote, "Nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his dispute," end quote.
Dispute. Even if the mobs are poor, and a poor guy there, and you're defending this poor guy, if he's in the wrong, what are you supposed to do? Don't show favor, because he's poor. Do not do this, he says. That's really interesting, because an awful lot of people protest because they're poor. And people join the poverty people and fighting for their causes, and they do and bring the mob to do the job. Yes, Jeff.
But what about social justice?
There's always a Jeff in the crowd, you know that?
This is a little bit out there, but that verse kind of made me think of the conspiracy theories around like people like the Illuminati and stuff.
Oh.
And how there are rumors about people being excessively rich and they're the few that control every single event in the earth. You know, and people kind of get carried away with that because they're rooting for the underdog that doesn't have all the money and this and that. I mean, is that kind of saying maybe we shouldn't concern ourselves?
Okay, you can kind of connect that. I understand that. That's understandable. I agree. I myself, personally, when someone talks to me about, quote, the Illuminati, and a quote, my ears instantly closed. Instantly closed. They talk about any group that they think is instantly closed. Instantly closed. I don't listen to it. I don't respond to it. I make no comment. I walk away. When I'm standing there looking like a dope, I can't walk away. And they're looking at me like, this guy doesn't understand what I'm talking about, does he? And I say, no, I don't understand a single thing you talk about. There was many years ago, one of our daughters said, you don't live in the world of reality. We says, yeah, we chose not to. We literally chose not to. I don't want to live in that world. I'm just in the world. I'm not of it. So what? Don't fight for that which is bad. Simple as that. That's not that hard to figure out. That's what he said. Okay. I already read verse 9 about... do not oppress the stranger in comparison to chapter 22, verse 21. Verse 13 of chapter 23. It's kind of an interesting statement. All right. In all things that I have said to you, be circumspect in one of your languages. It's a Hebrew word meaning to to put a hedge around it with thorns. Thorns. Put a thorn thing around what I said to you. Why? Verse 13. It says, well, this one here translated as circumspect. The other ones have it translated as, let's see, take heed. Another one say something else. Pay attention to everything I say. It's a way of translating things. But why put a guard, why put a hedge around the things God has said to you?
Protect it.
So what?
To protect it.
No, it protects you. If you put the hedge around everything God says to you, where are you? You're in where He has spoken to you. Don't let the outside world come in and influence you. We just got through meeting about, you know, that who wants to do evil. If the mob wants to do evil, don't join them. Stay in the hedge. Yes.
There's a song about that, actually. I don't. I'm not a singer. No, but it, hey, knock it off. Basically, it's. I forgot the exact song name. The lyrics doesn't make a difference. But it's a point that seeing all the angles changes the confidence in my eye, and that the principle is that if you see a given issue, oh well, God says this, but look at all these other views of the same problem, and it produces compromise within inside of you. Because you start seeing all, you have broken apart the hedge, look at every examination of it. That's not what God wants you to do.
That's
it's
a good approach.
Principle.
I like that one. I couldn't have said it better if I wanted to. Then he talks about keeping the feast of unleavened bread. All right, verse 15. And then verse 16, the feast of harvest means the Shavuot, which you sow in the field. And the Feast of Ingathering means the Feast of the seventh month with all that ingathering takes place from the first of the month. Oh, you had a question?
Nope. Just in pairing along with what Daniel was saying, the other challenge of that is many things that are true and clear can be made muddy and detracted from via, quote, context, unquote.
That's true. That's a good way to put it, too. You know, and Yeshua said something to the disciples. He said to them, take heed how you hear. Don't take heed what you hear, but take heed how you hear it. You better have that how come from God. All right? How you're going to hear it, you better hear it how God wants you to hear it, not hear it how somebody else wants you to hear it. And basically, take heed, put a hedge around it, everything I have said to you, pay close attention. Okay, so three times a year, you're going to have all males gather before Adonai Yahuwah. Verse 17 there. Now, verse 18 is very interesting. Now, we talk about the blood sacrifice, right? We know what the blood sacrifice is. It says it's my blood sacrifice. We know that refers to the lamb. Or the goat. That's my blood sacrifice, he says. And you're not going to have it with leavened bread. Unleavened bread. That you're going to have it with. It has to do with calling the killing of the lamb. And partaking of it. During the days of unleavened bread. Not during the days of leavened bread. But during the days of unleavened bread. So it's referring basically to the lamb. Verse 19 is very fascinating. First of the first fruit. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? What's up there? Rashit Karzer. Now he mentions this in the 19th verse. Rashit Bikukre. The first, the beginning, the start. Something's started. Something's beginning. and you shall bring it to the house of Yahuwah thy Elohim. And then he says, you will not seethe or not cook. In a lot of different translations, even the Jewish people we talk to, they understand what it means. Don't kill this lamb while still nursing on its mother's milk. Simple as that. Everybody understands that, but we kind of have it from a different slant. You can look at every translation you want. Doesn't make a difference. Here we are. Now, subject matter changes in verse 20. This part is fascinating in chapter 23, verse 20. Subject matter abruptly changes. What is the subject matter here? It's kind of connected to the feast. Connected to three times a year. But what he said, behold, I send an angel before you to keep you in the way and to bring you to the place which I have prepared. Really? Did God actually prepare the place? Or do these people have to come and repair the place? Did you get this, what I'm saying? He says, I have prepared it for you. When was he preparing it for them? When did he start doing that? Who was living there preparing the place? Who? 6 groups of people, 6 nations were there preparing the place. I mean, look, when they went there, we'll get to later on, but you know, the quote, grapes are so large, they took 2 men to carry 1 bundle. That's a lot. Who grew them? Who's taking care of the vineyard? Who's making sure it works? Who's taking care of all the animals? Who's making all the crops work? Oh, it just happened. Or he has prepared the way. Well, he uses people to prepare the way for his people. Do you know that? You have to ask yourself another question. Since he prepared the way, and question, yes.
To me, analogy personally speaking, is that imagine for a moment you were going out to buy a field. Well, there are 2 different kinds. One that has been farmed before, and one that's completely wild, full of shrubs and everything else on the side. Which one are you going to pay more money for?
The one
that's been farmed and already cleared out and ready.
The one that's already prepared for
exactly.
You.
Exactly, it's already made and ready. Though you weren't using it, somebody else was, it's still ready
and to guess what, when they went in there, farmlands were there, homes were there, cities were there, buildings were there, all sorts of cattle, all sorts of stuff, all the grapes were there, all the trees were there, all the orchards were there. I wonder who prepared it. I know, it was just coincidental, right? But they didn't get there for 40 years later, but God still had to put it in preserve for them. Anyway, that's kind of interesting when I thought that thing. They said something very interesting in verse 21. Yes, go ahead.
Kind of funny, but it just kind of reminds me of that joke where the woman prays for bread every day and the atheist is walking under her porch and hears her and then throws a loaf of bread on there and says, ha ha, God didn't give that to you.
I'm going to read the next verse about this angel. Don't get him mad. You mean angels actually could get mad? Really? Yes, Daniel.
They have no orders to give mercy. They are servants. They do obey God's orders until they're carried out.
We can upset them.
Yeah, no kidding. God can be angry with us, and they have standing orders. So unless for some reason God says, no, stop, there's no reason for them to give mercy for something. It's not their job. That's God's job.
Right. And you read that part about David and the angel there with the sword.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? No, don't go to your father. That angel was just going to do his job. Quote, that's what he got paid for. Well, actually, that's what he lives for. That's how he lives. That's how he makes a living. Anyway, this particular angel says, he will not pardon you. Don't get him mad. Oh, wait a minute. Why should I be troubled by an angel getting mad at me for? After all, he's not God. Verse 22. He, indeed, if you obey his voice and do all I say to you, then I will be an enemy to your enemies, an adversary to your adversary. Let's put it this way. I will be a Satan unto your Satans. Okay? Verse 23. For my angel shall go before me. Why not behind him? Why not with him? He's going to go before me. What's he going to do? And bring you to these five nations, Amorite, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hittites, and Jebusites. Now he's going ahead, and God's going to get rid of them. Now, verse 24. I'm going to backtrack here. In verse 22-21, I didn't finish that. For my name is in him. That's a pretty powerful terminology, don't you think? So the angel that was going before the house of Israel has a name. I wonder what his name is. Yahshua. Who else got any idea who his name may be? Ooh. You don't know? They're who? The Word. Moses is an angel. The Word represents the Messiah. He grants you mercy.
It says don't provoke him.
In the book of Daniel, the very last part, he says, an angel gave the name, will stand up and fight for you. What did Michael mean? What does the name Michael mean?
Like you.
So what?
Who is like you?
Who is like Elohim?
Right.
That's what Michael means. Who is like Elohim? And this is the only angel that's got that name. We have Gabriel. But you know what happened when Gabriel got upset? Stopped the guy from speaking again, didn't he? For a long time. Don't mess around with him either. Now, I'm not saying that's who it is. But I just find that interesting that in the book of Daniel says, Michael will stand up for your people. And it's also rewritten there in the book of Revelations where Michael now comes on the scene and he does something. He fights against the Satan. And he wins. Powerful, powerful angel, wouldn't you think? I don't know. This is my thoughts. It means nothing. Yes.
It's also Mika
Mocha. Michael comes from Mika Mocha. His name is pronounced Michael, but that's really not how it really is pronounced. Anyway, so far, so good. All right. Any questions? Any thoughts?
I've never seen them, but I was looking for an apartment to live in when my children were really small and I was really heavy with child at the time. And wild dogs, some vicious dogs came running after us and there was a lower window. And at that point in time, I cried out and something was pushing the dog out the window.
That's cool. Yeah.
The dog sat still and looked up above me.
It's like
he could see it, whatever it was, and I just said, Father.
My own experience was when there was two big, giant Dobermans, nasty ones. They were trained to attack. And I walked up to the place. I had a piece of paper in my hand. I walked up to these, and these two Dobermans came full attack. Stopped in midair and dropped straight down. Well, they could have attacked me, but there they are. I looked at them. I just know who got you.
Yeah.
It was a funny thing. I'd never see had been attacked by a dog and it stopped in midair. Big, huge Doberman, black one, large. And he went straight down. Like he saw something that I couldn't see. But you remember that donkey? He saw something that the guy didn't see a single thing. Sometimes you wonder whether animals see more things than you do. Because they're not afraid of it. I mean, that's the way they are. Anyway, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about or show you. I wonder if I could find it. Let me... No, I don't need to talk about that one. Not important. Not important. Any comments?
I have a question. Why, when some people saw the angel, they would worship him? If we're not supposed to worship angels. Like when Abraham and the three guys came and mm-hmm. he fell. Why are they worshiping the angel?
Well, you better read carefully what's being written there. What does angel mean?
Messenger.
A messenger.
Right.
Only two of them continued on to Sodom and Gomorrah. The other one stood there, and then he said, that third one said, how can I keep from Abraham the things I'm going to do? He is my friend. He was not talking to an angel. He's talking to...
In other places... They also worship the angel.
Oh, yeah. In
so
book, Timothy or one of Timothy says they worship angels. Well, why? Something more terrifying. And some come as an angel of light. Okay. Remember, the principality of this air is the principality of this air. But there's a whole lot more than just him. And what did Yahshua say? They are at war with one another. Constantly at war with one another. And they're not gonna stay because that kingdom is crumbling. It doesn't stay together. It doesn't know how to, quote, be echad. Simple as that. Any more questions? So this part is kind of like an interesting section, and it's a hard one to go through sometimes, but it's not that hard to figure out. So this makes logical sense. And judgments are judgments. And how do you avoid those judgments? Pay attention to the judgment, and then you can avoid the judgment. Does that make sense to you? Makes sense to me anyway. You know, that's the reason why I have, I don't talk about bad things. I don't talk about bad people. If someone doesn't like, quote, some famous individuals on the face of the earth and speak evil against them, my mind is blank. I don't repeat what they say, nor do I want to hear what they say. It's out. It's gone. The book of Psalms says, the man who is righteous doesn't even communicate with those who are not just liars, but those who speak evil of others, walk away. Close your mind. There are things that God wants us to do, and we can do that because we have gotten His Spirit to do so. There was a statement that I've been thinking about. I don't know exactly how to word it, so out it comes. As I said before, a lot of people say they don't know what God wants me to do, or for the individual. I don't know what God wants me to do. Let me ask you a question. Don't answer it. Just think about the question. Since the Father gave His Son that you might not just have life, but you might have His Spirit in you. Why would He give you His Spirit if He wasn't going to tell you about who He is? Why would He give you His Spirit, so you be in wonderment of saying, I don't know what He thinks about? Why would He give you His Spirit If they didn't give it to you, so you get to know him. And we say, well, you can't know the Father. Yes, you can. What did Jesus say to Philip? If you know me, guess what? You know the Father. What do you know about the Son of God? What do you know about him? If you know about him, you know about the Father. Let me ask you a question. Do you think Moses knew the creator of heaven and earth? What about Abraham? How did Abraham know? Because he talked.
Well, there's more than that, though.
I'm sorry, what?
How he lived his life.
No, I'm not talking about how he lived life. That's a personal thing. I'm saying we ourselves sometimes think God does not talk to me, or I don't know what he wants me to do. And it's all over the place. He tells us and shows, he's given us his spirit so we get to know who he is, not who we are. If we look at ourselves, who we are, flesh, blood, sin, crap, whatever you want to call yourself, then you're looking at yourself and you become self-centered. And all you think about is you, you, and you. Or me, myself, and I. And to blankety blank with the spirit God gave me. What? We can't say that. He says, I want you to get to know me. He said, seek ye what? The kingdom of God. Why? Because that's where I am at. And I want you to be there. I want you to be there. And I am going to give you my righteousness. I'm going to let you know exactly what I think. I'm going to let you know exactly how I talk. I want you to know exactly how I live. My righteousness, you're going to ask for my... I'm going to give it to you. All you have to do is do what? Ask. Bring me to the point. Almost finished. You'll excuse me for a minute. I'm going to become a preacher here for a minute. Oh, no, you're leaving. That's okay. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. Everyone who asks receives. And he who seeks finds. And he who knocks, it opens up to him. In my life and in your life, ask yourself a question. Listen to these three things that Yeshua said. If I ask for something from God and he gives it to me, and then I say, oh, I want to seek now, but you don't seek what he's given you, you start seeking for something else, like a job, good health, $1 million. You think he's going to waste his time when he gave you what you wanted to know in the first place? What are you going to seek next? After he has given to you, what is he going to give to you? His spirit. His world. His life. His son's life. That's what he's given to you. Now, what are you going to do? You need to seek that spirit. You need to seek that life. You need to seek that son. And guess what you're going to do? You're going to find it. All right? And the last one, knock. What do you do when you knock? It's going to open up. What are you going to do? Walk in. Walk in. Not with a Rolls Royce. Or I'm out of debt. Or my health is 100%. No. Walk into the kingdom of God and his righteousness. That's what Yeshua is referring to. He wasn't referring to, you want an apple? Ask for it, and you'll seek it, you got it, and you open up and eat it. You know, is that what he's after? He's no, God takes care of those mundane things, right? He takes care of the food, clothing, housing, everything. He's already taken care of that one. And but he says, what are you going to seek? What are you going to ask? What are you going to strive for? Use that terminology. So each one of us may have a little different wording to say. But what I'm saying is that when you start asking God for something, He gives it to you. Now start seeking that what you asked for, and you're going to find it. And when you find it, guess what? Go knock on the door, and it's going to open it to you, and there you are. Yes?
I know the answer to this, but I'm just putting it out there. For whose sake do we seek? For God's sake or for our sake?
You answer the question.
For
you answer
both?
Your own question. You answer your own question.
Well, I selfishly want to say for my sake, but I also think it's for His sake. So it's like
because
a win-win situation.
Because He said so. Seek ye first. Okay. All right. Does He answer your question?